The Superpower Mamas channel is brought to you by Superpower Experts. Visit superpowerexperts.com to join the superpower universe and unlock your superpowers today.
You're listening to Superpower Mamas, reclaiming the sacred journey of motherhood with Tatiana Berende.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Superpower Mamas podcast show. I'm your host, Tatiana Berende, and today our guest is Lauren Reitsema. We're going to be talking about building healthy relationship skills, which every person on the planet needs. So I'm really happy that she's here to talk to us about this today. Let me tell you a little bit more about Lauren before we dive into our conversation. Lauren's interest in relationship skills began when her parents divorced after almost 20 years of marriage. Seeking to understand better patterns for her own future legacy, she earned a Bachelor in Communication from TCU. Lauren is the author of two books, In Their Shoes, a book dedicated to helping parents better understand and connect with children of divorce, and Relationship Essentials, skills to feel heard, fight fair, and set boundaries in all areas of life. Her vocational speaking experience spans over 15 years, teaching a variety of relationship skills to teens, adults, and corporate teams. Lauren recognizes relationships are one of life's most important assets and energizes a room to prioritize the people in their lives. She and her husband, Josh, love adventures with their three children, all Colorado natives. They're avid skiers, outdoor enthusiasts, and Broncos fans. And we're excited to welcome you to the show today, Lauren.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we dive in, I love to ask people about their superpowers. And I'm curious with you in particular, what your superpowers are in the world of relationship building.
I've been told objectively from outsiders, and I would hope to believe it for myself, I would say I'd answer that question with the word intention. I feel like with all that we juggle and all that we have to accomplish, there's just a focus of intention and presence with people right when you're there, that can really be a game changer. So I don't know if it's a superpower or an intentional gift, but intentionality would be my superpower as a mama.
I love that. And I love, because it takes pause and it takes preemptive awareness in order to have intention. I think a lot of people, and, you know, we'll dive deeper into this after the break, but I think a lot of the problems that we see in relationships today is a lack of presence. And intention brings presence, because in order to have intention, you have to, like I said, you have to be aware ahead of time of what the interaction is all about, right?
Exactly. And I think intentional thought and intentional action can be transformative in so many ways, and it doesn't take that much more effort. I think that's what's so great, is it's more of a focus and a posturing than it is a skill. And I think it can be a game changer.
Yeah, totally. Well, we are going to talk all about that and why it's important, and why relationship skill building is important as a parent. I think often we can sort of take some of those relationships with our children for granted, or just sort of think that we're supposed to know how to do things. So I'm really excited to have you here today. Lauren's also authored a book with her mother. And so we can talk a little bit more about that dynamic too. But before we dive into the juice, we're going to go to a quick break, because I don't like to cut off the flow. But before we go to break, Lauren, will you tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and your work and your books?
Certainly. You can find me and our team at the Center for Relationship Education at www.myrelationshipcenter.org. Myrelationshipcenter.org. And I am available via email, and also have, I'm so sorry, Tatiana, I got cut off. Can I start that one again?
Sure.
Absolutely. You can certainly find us on our company website, myrelationshipcenter.org, www.myrelationshipcenter.org. And there you'll find my email and our staff connect and all the things that you need to know about relationship skill building. If you're interested in the book directly, you can find it on Amazon and just search Relationship Essentials.
Awesome. So we are talking with Lauren Reitsema today about building healthy relationship skills. And we're going to dive into a really good conversation when we get back. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to the Superpower Network. If you're ready to transform yourself and transform the world through podcasting, we invite you to join us. We co-create a non-competitive, collaborative environment designed to support you as you step into your greatness. Go now to superpowerexperts.com and click on the programs tab to get started today.
All right, we're back. So Lauren, let's sort of dive in here. I mean, we can ask a very basic question of why is this so important right now? And I think there's, you know, this is a topic that we cover a lot on this show and also on my other show, Sex, Love, and Superpowers, about just why relationship building is so important. And I think, you know, we're living in a time where, I mean, I've definitely seen the impact of COVID on people's abilities to relate to one another. We have all of this social media that has really changed the game and how we relate. So talk to us a little bit about what you're doing and why it's so important in this day and age.
I really feel that the core of human existence is connection, and we marvel in the capacity to connect, like you said, via social channels or web technology. We can be in a global conference room across different cultures and time zones within minutes. And yet, when you survey the populace, especially in Western American culture, so many people are feeling, even with these tools, isolated, disconnected, alone, without a sense of belonging. And to me, that is a really big crisis of the human spirit, because we were born to be connected. We were born into families, a family structure. If we were adopted into a family or share kinship, every human desires some place to belong. And I think that the technologies that are meant to connect us inadvertently have isolated many of us from that core human condition of touch and taste and smell and see and all the different three-dimensional parts of human relationships. So although we have survived and some even thrived and pivoted in the midst of global pandemic directives to disconnect and distance, I think we need for our health to revisit relationships as a whole and find ways to make connection a central core part of human learning. And so that's why we want to bring this skill building into it, because very rarely are we taught how to do connection. We're just expected to know it. And there's a lot that we don't know until it's maybe pain inducing or something that we should have done differently.
What would you say are some of like the key things that we're missing or that the majority of people tend to miss that are probably pretty basic in terms of building relationship, but most people don't do it?
That is such a good question. I think that what first comes to my heart in answering that is, I think we miss the value of human beings. I talked a little bit in the book about how when you know something has high value and cost, you search and work harder to keep it in your to keep it on you or with you, or you always know where it is. And I think relationships, when we do dehumanize the value of people and we assume that we're better than others or that we have this somewhat of a caste system, if you will, that we lose the value of connection because we're so concerned about what's in it for us, what's in it for me. And we forget that our decisions, our impacts, our conversations actually affect others. And so I think we've lost a sense of value of others. And we've also lost an empathy for people's story and a trust that it's worth knowing the core of someone, no matter what their walk of life.
I feel like you just touched on so many deeply important pieces. I was actually reflecting on this the other day, that whole concept of value and how we value people. And actually, I had another woman on this show not too long ago. We were talking about creating a more inclusive world for, you know, people with disabilities, and how there's just sort of this inherent underlying storyline that we have that if someone is less able or is not going to be, you know, the next Steve Jobs, that they are less valuable as a person. Instead of coming from this place that we are all inherently valuable because we are here, because we were created and we're here, and therefore that makes us important and valuable. And I was thinking about it just in the context of like insurance and how, anyway, my husband and I were looking at mortgage insurance, and they were talking about, well, you know, you might want to insure one person more than the other if one person makes more money. And, you know, it's like there's a subtle messaging that we have in our culture of like how you value a person, and that like only what someone is bringing in financially is going to contribute to their worth. I think there's a lot that we have to untangle in there as a, yes, as a society and as a culture, because we are such a commodified culture. And so we have placed monetary value on people. And it's done this really weird thing in our brains where we then equate a value that a person brings to some kind of like, what can I get from them or what can they give me?
Yes. Their performance and their financial worth is then assimilated into self-worth. And we're talking to mamas. I mean, I think one of the best ways I've been able to explain it is when we have the miraculous experience of holding that newborn baby and birthing them into this world, we love them immediately. And we do anything to protect and direct them into health. And they didn't do anything for us. They didn't perform their way into being loved. They didn't earn that. They didn't,
they actually
drained my bank account
for a while.
Right. They drained my bank account. They didn't fill it. And so if that's how we start life, where do we go wrong in all of a sudden devaluing the human condition of being born on this planet and starting to scorekeep and put people in buckets of more or less value based on those worldly and pretty fleeting things. So I think it's a really important conviction for my own heart when I start to get into relationship strife, or when I start to see somebody who's caused me a lot of pain, that my first gut reaction is to assume that I'm better than they are, right? And that's where I think the error of our ways starts, because if I can see myself in their shoes as human with more to learn about why we're in that place, or why they're causing me pain, or why I've caused them pain, then I think we're starting the conversation so much further ahead than many of us ever get to in a lifetime, because we just, our culture directs us to put each other in a big linear line rather than a circular connection based on our condition as humans.
Yeah. And I think people are really unwilling to give up their own self-righteousness. Like, I mean, I know I found myself in those moments where it's just like, but I know I'm right and this person is wrong and I've been wronged, and it just feels so good, but also doesn't feel good at all to stay in that place of like, but I'm right and they're wrong. And people get really attached. And I've seen this over and over again. And I work with this in my own family dynamic. I work with this with our clients on, you know, is it more important to you to be right or to be happy? Because you don't always get to have both.
And there's something about surrendering your rightness and owning your own wrongs that actually frees relationship to be in right standing. And there's just so much power in saying, yeah, I didn't do that well, or my actions did play into that. And you're so right. The self-righteous pride protection is more valued than the person protection. And so I believe that we need to surrender our pride and start to fight for people. And when that can happen, beautiful things take place.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's tricky. There's a dance to it. There's nuance to it because, you know, both can be true. We can surrender our rightness, and that doesn't automatically make the actions of another person correct or good or right either.
Certainly. We've taken on in our training a new semantic way to approach that. So with words, instead of saying the right way or the wrong way, we've tried to use words like unhealthy or healthy or helpful versus frustrating. Because if you say right and wrong, then immediately it minimizes the perspective of that person or experience that's labeled wrong. And it justifies the rightness in the other person. If you say that was a really toxic or unhealthy behavior or pattern, but it wasn't necessarily the wrong pattern, because maybe they're walking through anger and they need emotional safety to say that really hurt me and their anger was the wrong emotion for the person who received it, that's actually not fully truthful. So even changing the words out from right and wrong to healthy and unhealthy or helpful or distracting, those types of things can be a first step and a practical way to assume neutral ground.
I love that. It takes it out of sort of the black and white and moves it into, there's a lot of shades, a lot of shades of color. And especially when we're talking about unhealthy relationship dynamics, you know, like there, we have to be willing to pull it out of the black and white, because that's when we get stuck in our rightness. And that's when it's like, we will fight so hard for our limitations and what we think we know, just in order to not see someone as fully human because of what we think we have to give up in doing so.
You're spot on.
So let's bring this down to some real practical, like, tips for parents. You know, anyone who's listening to this, who's a parent, what are some basic fundamental things that they can start to bring in, that they can start to implement, some real skills that we can give people that are going to make a huge world of difference? I mean, I feel like we just named one, right? Like, let's step out of our rightness and start to use broader terms that aren't as black and white. What are some other things for parents that we can bring in here?
I love that you use the word practical, because in writing this piece, Relationship Essentials, the whole platform was to give memorable, practical, skills-based tools. So because the metaphors throughout the book are tools, I can just speak to those exactly and hope to leave some nuggets of in your memory. But one that comes to mind right now is the flashlight, which is spotlighting others and being disciplined with your intentionality, like we talked about at the beginning, to really focus the light on the other person. And in a parenting role, that happens to be our children. And so often, this is an interesting topic to discuss, because we are the authority. As adults, we're the parent. We have the resource, we have the knowledge, we have the prefrontal cortex development to make the wise and healthy decisions. But our children still have a voice, and they have an experience in relationship to navigate. And so if we can spotlight what they're going through, what they're thinking about, their world, even as young as a toddler — my youngest is 3 and my oldest is 11. So I have middle school all the way down to potty training right now. And a little one in the middle, who just trying to navigate it all. And I find, even in spotlighting my toddler during her tantrums, to be able to give her emotional freedom when I've lost my cool, which is very regular in those toddler tantrum moments, to be able to say, what are you experiencing right now? And letting her use the words that she has to describe it in a way that is age appropriate. And when I can reflect that light on her and say, Okay, so it sounds like you're really angry that you didn't get to choose your clothes. Is that why you're mad? Is that why you're mad at mommy? Versus, this is what you're wearing. I'm the parent. Mm-hmm. Forget about the argument. I just find that for me personally, I have a lot more power and I end up getting what I need in the parenting role simply by affirming and not minimizing the experience of my child. So the flashlight tool gives a lot of practical strategies on how to spotlight someone else, no matter what their age and stage, and how to make sure that they feel like the star for a second so that you actually demonstrate validation. And instead of pioneering and puppeteering your own power and control.
Mm. Yeah, that's a big one. And, you know, something I think there's a dance in there too. All of this, it's not black and white. There aren't like hard and fast rules. Because something that I've seen a lot kind of on the flip side of that, especially in my generation of parenting, is like kind of giving all agency over to the kids and then the kids run the show. And so I think there is a way to acknowledge what somebody is feeling, especially as a parent, and still know that like, this is what needs to happen.
Certainly. That's a great bridge into the second. So actually what you're saying is we're two kindred spirits in that. Cause one of my biggest frustrations with this generation of parenting is that kids lack boundaries and discipline. Yeah. And so the spotlighting technique is designed not to change the power differential, but to validate the feeling and the emotion. But once that happens, you then set the boundary that keeps them safe. And for this particular tool, we use a tape measure. It's so practical. And it's something you can remember when you measure your boundaries before an event. You know, it's measure twice, cut once. If mm-hmm. you're, my grandfather was a contractor. That mm-hmm. was a rule we always remembered is measure twice, cut once. And what typically happens with boundaries is, especially as parents, we are moving so fast and we're so emotionally driven to make sure our kids have what they need that we sometimes forget to discern and set the boundary ahead of time. And we start moving it in real time, as opposed to knowing the authority is the parent. The children are the ones that are walking under that authority, and the boundaries that your parents set are actually there to allow you to have freedom. Boundaries actually create more freedom than they are restrictive. And there's research that backs that, that is just fascinating that when you take settings where there's no fence and but a beautiful, you know, deck, for example, and kids will not feel safe to explore what's around them without the boundaries of the fence. As soon as you put the boundary lines up, they go and explore and they have more freedom than they would in the restriction. And I think the misnomer here is that so many people assume that by lifting the boundary, you're giving kids more freedom. And we find it's actually just the opposite. Mm-hmm. By setting very clear, concrete, this is where the black and white is the win. This is the boundary and you may not cross it. It actually creates safety for children rather than a chaotic environment where their brain doesn't have the capacity to know how far they can go and how close they should stay.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, and I'd be curious to look at some of that research, because that's definitely been my experience in, you know, working in early childhood and then in parenting. There is a safety in that, and it allows for more freedom of expression. Let's talk for a minute. You know, we have the parent child dynamic, but then we also have the other adults that are in the parents' life. And I am a firm believer that, you know, it's, you know, you said at the beginning, we're not taught these skills, and yet we are taught something, and it's what we see modeled to us by our parents. And those of us who are parents know, like, we're working out stuff that our parents didn't teach us, or that they did teach us that was, you know, really harmful. So talk to us a little bit about how you work with parents and their dynamics with each other and with the other adults that are around.
Well, if you're talking more of a, with each other in a family structure of parent, you know, however that looks is a big partnership, I always remind parents that you started the dynamic first and that your relationship needs to be prioritized, and the kids need to know that. I always tell my children that they are the love of our life and the light of our heart, but dad comes first, because we had a love for each other before they came into this world. And if we don't prioritize that relationship, then they're not getting the best of us. And so from a practical standpoint, in a romantic context, whatever your partnership situation looks like in your family structure, be sure to validate your partner ahead of your children, because that is the best gift that you can give your children, is a healthy model of a loving relationship and committed partnership. I think a lot of kids want to believe that love can last forever, and that parents can actually like each other, and they're not just tactically working together, but they do have that sense of connection. And it's really special when kids can see that. They also need to see that you fight, that you have conflict, and that you create a place to navigate that in a healthy modeling way, so that kids are not surprised the first time that you have an argument. My husband and I joke a lot about when our children are fighting, we have no pause in just saying, stop it, you figure this out, you know, and we walk them through the conflicts and navigate that sibling, you know, elbowing in the car. But yet if we're having a frustration or an argument, or in the car or in the kitchen or whatever, that we feel like we have to hide it or make it so that it's not known to the children. Now, there are negative ways to model conflict and healthy ways to model conflict. And so we want to obviously work with the same tools that we teach in our own relationship and say, one of our big things is, hey, mom and dad had an argument. We're having one right now. Watch how we fight, just how we watch you guys fight on road trips, that type of thing. And it actually diffuses the anger a little bit, and it makes us approachable to our children. And then they show them the whole gamut of why we're angry, how we communicate through that. And then hopefully they get to see the apology and the forgiveness applied. So that's one thing with a romantic partner. And as far as other adults, your work-life relationships affect how you parent, your community of relationships, your people, your posse. I just would say that modeling behavior and being willing to see yourself in a way that is not always positive is important, so that you can get that objective adult perspective and say, hey, I experienced this with my kids or with my husband yesterday. Is this normal? Am I alone in this? Because I think that isolation we talked about again at the beginning of this conversation can make people feel like they're crazy. They're the only ones that struggle. And part of the beauty of parenting and what makes us human is that all of our relationships, if we're authentic in them, adults, community, romantic partner, and kiddos, can excel when we feel like, oh my gosh, I experienced that too. And we find that we're not so alone.
Yeah, I think that is huge. And in that too, you know, we have to, again, it's nuanced in that it's so relieving to find that we're not alone. And there's something that we talk about over here at SPE, which is co-signing. Because there are some people that we go to when we are really feeling in our rightness and we want to be validated in that. And that is very different than like, am I the only one who's experiencing this? Because, you know, we all know we have those people who, if we go to them and we're upset, they're going to just tell us that we're right. And like, how dare that other person, you know, and that's not always helpful.
Yes. And that objective party that you said, that every relationship strife has two parties involved or more. So to be able to say, to come to the table and start with yourself and say, what did I do to contribute to this? And own your part first. Can you imagine how different our relationships would look if we came to the table admitting our faults before pointing the blame at someone else right away? Yeah. Just saying, this is what I did to contribute to this. There's a lot of power there.
There is a lot of power there. And I'm glad you named it as such, because I think especially if we're caught in, you know, being a victim, like it can be really hard to do that. And I wrote a whole article all about this. It's on our site, the abuse, trauma, and the law of attraction. And because there again, like this isn't black and white. There are nuances to this, and there is abuse, you know, like that is a thing that happens, and there are behaviors that just, it's not okay. You know, we do get to have boundaries around certain things. And oftentimes if we've been in abusive relationships or dynamics before, we can get stuck in this sort of like, I've been wronged space. And it can be really hard to come forward and say like, this is how I have played into it.
Certainly. I love that you brought that up, because my perspective in skill building always has to start with a neutral level of health. And if there's abuse or trauma, that is something that needs to be dealt with at the core and validated before you can apply the practicality of some of these tools. We want to start with a healthy, neutral ground level. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. Some of the behaviors of even going back to what we talked about, spotlighting or setting a boundary with somebody who's actually crossing that boundary in a physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual abuse way is not your escape path. That requires a lot more professional intervention and safety planning. So I just want to speak to that from a place of, when I come to the table with skills, I don't dismiss the power of what has gone unnoticed or undealt with in toxic and abusive cycles.
Yeah. And thank you for that. And I think it's also important to name that there is a point where you do get to step out of that too. If that yes. is you, if you have been in really toxic, abusive patterns, it's not a life sentence.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's required of your health and your heart to be able to take that journey toward a new, healthy relationship cycle, because the pinnacle of relationship wellness, the word that we always say is healthy relationships, right? If we're talking, relationships can be defined in so many ways, and many of them are toxic, and you can't have, it's the basic, it's Maslow's basic human needs. You can't have health and growth on top of a toxic soil. You have to start with the care of your own healthy environment and setting. And then you can use these tools. Because we use tools, we talk about building. If you were to go build a house on a foundation that was moldy or that was sinking into the ground, you could use all the most beautiful tools in the world, but your house would be really, really toxic. And the same is true of relationships. You have to start with a really healthy foundation.
Yeah. And so you were talking about, you know, fighting in front of your children, and I would love to expand that a little bit more, because I'm sure I could feel it. Like, there are listeners who are like, what do you mean there's a healthy way to fight? Like, what,
yeah,
how do you do that? So what is a healthy way to fight in front of your children? What does that look like? What does that mean? Because I think honestly, right now on the planet, we all need to know what healthy fighting looks like, because there's a lot of really toxic stuff getting thrown around, and it's infiltrating our families. It's infiltrating our homes, whether it's in our immediate family structure or not. Like, there's a lot of toxicity out there. So how do we fight in a healthy way?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's such a big question. I don't know that we do it perfectly, but what we've decided to do is one, if there's escalation and really passionate anger at the core, those are the types of fights that we might bring into a different context or a setting and just get all those endorphins and the cortisol and the stress hormones in a place that kids are not absorbing that. So there's different levels of conflict exposure. So if you're fighting over what you're going to watch on TV versus a big financial debt crisis, whatever that would be, there's a gamut there that you want to be discerning about. So first of all, take the fights that are age appropriate for children, and model those ones. Don't model, huge blowouts about things that would not be manageable for a child's brain. So when I'll talk with more of a middle ground, let's say that we're, my husband and I are arguing about something that was said or hurt feelings that was unintentional, but just we rolled our eyes or embarrassed each other in front of a colleague, something that's normal, but also relevant. And those are the types of things where what we always say is we use words like, hey, mommy and daddy are frustrated with each other. We're angry and you guys, I don't need you to be scared. I'm passionate. My kids know that I'm Italian and I'm passionate and I get really loud. And I say, mommy's Italian is coming out, but it doesn't mean that daddy and I are not, we don't love each other. We're having a fight. So that would be the first thing is declare when you see your kids kind of sneak into the room, or many of ours are right in the kitchen in an open space. The kids can say, oh, okay. And just say, don't be scared. We are having a fight just like you guys fight. This is okay. So that's the first step in healthy fighting is declaring the setting and the scene that this is what they're experiencing. It's conflict and it's normal in relationship. Then as you communicate with each other, obviously when you've got little ears, you're not going to throw profane language around or be disparaging toward each other, but it's that kind of passionate arguing that they might actually experience. And then we talk about just taking that break, that time out. Dr. Scott Stanley at University of Denver is famous for the timeout and the speaker listener technique. And that is featured in one of the chapters of Relationship Essentials, but being able to say, hey, I need a break. We need to take a timeout. And then modeling healthier patterns of listening to each other. It's called the speaker listener technique in chapter one of the book. That's one of our favorites where the kids can actually see mommy has a voice in this, dad has a voice in this. And then they're both validating that each voice has merit. And then hopefully if they're still around, sometimes the kiss and makeup part is, later in the day, but the idea of being able to allow your kids to see that there is a cycle to conflict. There's a trigger that gets you into the fight. And then there's the why you're fighting, the passion behind each individual story. And then there's the break that you take to say, we're not going anywhere with this. Let's let our cortisol drain out of our bodies and let's come back to the table. And hopefully they can then see validation and in best case scenarios, a full circle of forgiveness and saying, hearing them say you're sorry and owning your part.
Mm. Yeah. Easy to illustrate, much harder to do.
Absolutely. Practice.
I mean, to even just presence that you're having a fight, I think is pretty revolutionary.
I think that what's been helpful for us with our kids is to be able to let them think about a time when they also felt angry with their sibling, because it happens pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. And then for them to take that and say, you guys got through that and we're going to get through this too. And just a tone that is reflective of normalizing conflict, because I'm sure you see this a lot in your expertise in your line of work, where there's either this abusive, toxic, really, really aggressive conflict style that is super unhealthy to watch, or there's the shutdown, mm-hmm. stonewalling, never speak ill of each other. And both are equally as traumatic. because they both model the extremes of conflict. And if we can start to learn the middle ground and model that, I think it just releases our kids to say, wow, mom and dad fight too, and they make up, and so do our friends and our neighbors, and they were mad about this and that. And but ultimately we all come back together at the end of the day. And I think that's the healing salve in this, is that in order to be able to fight from a healthy perspective, you need to know that you're safe to come back together. And I always, one thing I always say to my husband is, I hate fighting with you, but I love that I can trust that you're always going to stay with me. That's not a luxury that I had as a child of divorce. And so it helps me know he's in it for good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very powerful. So we're coming towards the end of our time, but I do want to just touch briefly on what it's been like to write a book with your mother. Just coming full circle, because now you're an adult daughter, working with your mom. What's that journey been like?
Well, it was really a fun experience when I had this topic on the table with our publisher. I actually was going to write it just by myself, and I immediately hung up the phone with the agent and said, I've got to call my mom in on this project, because I felt like I couldn't authentically express the relationship tools that I was living out and experiencing without validating and honoring my mom's model in that, because she just has been this heroic person who's taken her own life experience and created goodness and health for others, and, you know, kind of taking lemons and making lemonade in the most visible way. And so I felt like because of that, it actually was a really honoring and fun experience to brainstorm stories of our own childhood and of my own childhood and her parenting, being able to vocalize for her what I remembered, bringing some of her momisms into tools, and then adding my own take on a lot of different things and having that voice that kind of rotated. I think also makes it more fun for the reader to see that a relationship context is writing a relationship book, because you can't write about relationships in isolation.
Yeah, no, I think it's really powerful that that was the choice, and that it was a collaboration that way. And I think especially, you know, a lot of people, you know, could hear that you're a child of divorce. And so then it's like, well, why would your mother be sort of a voice of authority in that, if she's the one who sort of brought some of this pain to you in your childhood experience? I'd be curious to hear you talk about that just a little bit.
Well, I think that we are very much two peas in a pod, and that we don't take victim mentality. We like to be victors and rise above. And so I think there's this delicate grace and balance in being authentic with our story and the broken parts of the pain, but also being able to take that and say, I own the fact that I didn't have these skills before, but I'm not going to excuse that to repeat the cycle again. And one of the things I feel so passionate about is that we have a chance to rewrite a new legacy, but in order to do something new, you have to do something different. In order to do something differently, you have to have something new. And so I believe that created a, rather than a who is this person to talk about relationship skills, it actually creates more credibility, in my opinion, because it demonstrates that surrender of pride we talked about earlier in our conversation, to be able to say, I didn't do this well, and I'm not going to protect my pride in that. I'm going to say, here's what I would suggest doing differently to save a generation from experiencing the same pain. And everybody, especially as a mom, we want to make our children's lives better than our own. And I feel like my mom helped do just that with establishing this foundation of relationship skill building. For me to be a part of that legacy is really a treasured part of my story.
Well, and I think it's so beautiful because it's turning on its head this concept that we have to have a pristine past in order to bring something, like we were talking about at the beginning, of value to the table. And I think, you know, we see this as something I'm very passionate about, is sort of changing our cultural relationship towards elders, or, you know, people as they're getting older. I think we there's a lot of room for improvement. And I love what you've done here in taking, you know, an experience that wasn't perfect, that didn't maybe turn out that great, and saying, here's what I learned from that. I would way rather have someone who's walked through fire and learned how to breathe on the other side than someone who's just studied it in school.
Always
talk to me about it. You know,
I think yes, so true. That's such a good perspective that you bring.
It's like there's information and then there's wisdom through lived experience. And I think I would love to see us culturally put more value on wisdom through lived experience than just gathering of information. Cause I think that's when we're really going to start to, just to bring this conversation full circle, that's when we're really going to start to see people as valuable for just who they are, because we've all had unique life experience. And therefore every single person you meet has something to teach you because they've lived something you have not.
So true. And that we always can learn. My mom is so inspiring because she's taught so many people so many things, but yet she's always the first to sit and learn from others. And I think that's something I want to model in my future as well.
Mm. So beautiful. Lauren, I've really enjoyed this conversation today. I'm so thankful that you came on the show and shared your wisdom with our audience. Will you tell them again the name of the book and where they can go to find it?
Certainly. The book is titled Relationship Essentials, and it's at all book retailers globally and also at Amazon. You can just search Relationship Essentials and you'll see a Lauren. If you put Lauren or Jonene, J-O-N-E-E-N, in the search bar, you'll find it right away, but it should pop up right for you. Relationship Essentials on Amazon or at any bookseller.
So beautiful. Thank you again. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Your listenership is what makes this show possible. And if you are wanting to dive more into the superpower universe, come and play with us. We have so much fun, good stuff going on, courses that are constantly being built out. We have our deep dive programs for people who are really wanting to uncover their superpowers and the nuances of how that works in your individual life. So come over to superpowerexperts.com, come and play with us in whatever capacity draws you over there. And until next time, reclaim your parenting journey as a sacred one for yourself, for your children, and for the world. Many blessings.
Thank you for listening to the Superpower Network. Go now to superpowerexperts.com to unlock your superpowers and change your life today.